love movies? Well, they love movies so much, it's a little bit disturbing. It's the Screaming Boy Podcast. Ronnie and Adam bring you news and reviews of new releases and classics. Now, here are the guys.
I know we took a couple weeks off, and then we took last week off due to, life, and we're trying to get our poop in a group, so to speak, and get some ideas ready, because we've had some movies come out that we wanted to cover and things like that, but we will cover them, like Spectre. I really want to cover it, but I have yet to see it. And you know, if you want to get some really good movie reviews, honest to goodness, I know we do reviews and we talk about them and things like that. But we do a lot of other things pertaining to movies, you know, talking about, you know, the best of this and our favorite this and things like that. But you could head over to the Radulich and Broadcasting Network and listen to Mark Radulich and Robert Winfrey. Wow, what is wrong with me tonight? Mark Radulich and Robert Winfrey talk about all kinds of different movies that they have reviewed. And, man, they do a phenomenal job. I know they've I have yet to listen to it, but they just recently reviewed The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, I'm going to see that tomorrow, actually.
Are you?
I'm taking my sons up. Yes, or we're going out tomorrow morning, because if you go at the 10 o'clock showing, it's like a quarter of what it normally costs to go to this movie theater. So we're going like 10 o'clock in the morning, and you get free popcorn, and yeah, they give you like a juicy juice or something. It's like a kid's thing. So I'm just like, yep, I'm going to see it. Plus, it's a monumental occasion because it's my kid's first movie theater experience.
Rock on.
Yeah, man, it's awesome.
Wait a minute. That's Caden's or Cash's?
Both. They're both going. I'm taking a 2-year-old and a 3.5-year-old to a movie theater tomorrow.
Ah, jeez, man.
Yeah, so I dare someone to say something to me.
Godspeed, my friend. But from what I understand, the Good Dinosaur review is very interesting, but they always do a great job. They've done a lot of movies, but tonight we're going to hit one of the movies that we have seen, that I have seen, and we're going to talk a little bit about it. But like I said, as you know, I said before, I just like the phrase, we're getting our poop in a group, and we've got the Christmas movie, the big movie of the Christmas season of this year, that's coming out in less than 2 weeks. And that is Star Wars, The Force Awakens. So we'll be doing some stuff leading up to that, and a complete review of it, which is going to be, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for it. I mean, I am a true, I'm a fanboy, I'm a nerd, I'm a geek, whatever you want to call me. I've been excited for this since it's been announced, we're going to talk about some of that next show for this coming week. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Were you going to say something, Adam?
I was going to say, you and me both, man. I am such a fanboy. It's not even funny.
Right.
Well, but I'm also the guy who, like, I've looked at all the, well, I try to steer clear of some of these fan theories and stuff like that.
Right.
One that I heard last week was really awesome. Particularly, let me kind of just bring this up before we get too far into it, just because I meant to send this to you earlier today, but I completely and utterly forgot. But basically, back in the original Star Wars, back in 1977, Han Solo says, he says something like, you know, I've flown from one side of the galaxy to the other, and I've seen a lot of strange, you know, the part where he's like, I've seen a lot of strange stuff, but I've never seen anything to make me believe there's all one powerful force controlling everything. There's no mystical energy and energy field that controls my destiny. It's a lot of simple tricks and nonsense. But in one of the new trailers, he says, it's all true, all of it.
Well, yeah.
He's like, the dark side, the Jedi, they're real. So it's like, I want to know what happened between the first movie, and I hope they explain it. So what happened in the first movie and this movie that made Han Solo a firm believer in the Force and the dark side and the Jedi and things like that?
Empire and Jedi? That's what happened.
I get that, but, you know, it's one of those things. I want them to address it, you know? Like, he made this statement in, you know, 1977, and then he made the other statement in 2015. So I want to hear him. I want to see him address that specific. I mean, because they took words, direct quotes from him, and basically they said, you know, he went from 100% on one side to 100% on the other. So I want them to address it. And if even if it is, you know, Empire and Return of the Jedi, that's cool. But I want to see how they explain it.
Right. You look at how he kind of changes. We'll talk more about it, but I just want to say in A New Hope, he actually tells Luke, "May the Force be with you," before they go off to fight, you know, the Death Star.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's more for next show. We're going to bring Jason Teasley on, and we're going to talk about that and have a good time. So look forward to that. We're going to talk about the trailers. We're going to talk about a little bit about, you know, some theories and things like that. Some crazy out there theories, and then some not so crazy out there theories. So it's going to be a lot of fun and a little crazy.
So, I look forward to it. I'm going to bring my notebook.
Oh gosh, and I have no doubt you actually have one. No doubt. But so recently I've been on a little bit of a downslide of watching movies, and it's really paining me because I want to see, you know, several of them that have been out recently. And I've only seen, you know, out of the few that I've wanted to see, because we kind of hit a lull there for a little bit of movies coming out that, you know, that were, you know, worthy of being, in our opinion, being talked about. But you know, Creed, the Peanuts movie, Spectre, The Martian, and The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. One just released again this week that I want to see, and it's Krampus. Because wow, dude!
You're talking about the like Norwegian version of Santa Claus, where if you're a bad little boy or girl, he comes, beats you with a stick, and drags you off to hell.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, it's a Christmas story for everyone.
And for the entire family, yes,
for the entire family.
Let's scare your children into being model citizens, and if they screw up. Man, it's like, I think if I were a kid and they said that if I stepped out of line that Krampus was going to come, stuff me in a bag, beat me with a switch, and then drag me to hell, I think if I screwed up once, I'd be like, well, no going back now.
Might as well burn everything down.
Yeah. It's, you know, nuke it from orbit just to make sure. It's the only way to be sure.
So, We'll be talking about Krampus coming up for the Christmas, you know, for the Christmas season. So that's a definite must. So, but the one movie that I have seen that I wanted to talk about a little bit tonight, actually kind of in length, was The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2. Now, I made it I kind of made it a point to see this because I am three movies invested into this and three books invested into this. So I want to see what they're going to do. I want to see what they're going to do with the rest of it. So, The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, the climactic ending of the Hunger Games saga, you know, Katniss Everdeen and Peeta Mellark and Gale, whatever his last name is, he's not important.
Well, thanks for that spoiler.
No, I just I don't care for that character. I mean,
I agree.
Starting at the Hunger Games and going into Catching Fire and then Mockingjay Part One, he was a little bit, I mean, he had some redemptive qualities, but all through that, it was kind of like he was just a secondary character that was just kind of there to throw a monkey wrench into, you know, the romantic storyline, you know, the romantic part of the plot, because she can't decide, just like any other you know, love triangle. She's like, well, she's known Gail forever, and you know, they're in love, or she thinks she loves him, and then she runs into PETA, and then they actually start falling in love throughout the games and the fanfare and everything, and their fabricated love story to make everybody, you know, sympathetic towards them, becomes real after a while. And so, you know, Gail being the, I guess you could say, almost alpha male, made me cheer for PETA even more, for the underdog, because Gail being the hunter, the marksman, all that stuff, which, you know, kind of made me cheer for the guy that shouldn't have a chance. He already knew Katniss. He already knew everything about her, knew her family. He was in good with the mom and the little sister and maybe even the cat.
Oh, the cat.
And then you got this new guy along, who comes along, who is stronger than what you think and more heroic than what you think, and, you know, who is actually the good guy, the nice guy, the almost underdog who wins her heart, and you kind of sitting there, you kind of cheer for him a little bit, you know, and I do, at least, you know, just because of that whole storyline part of it. You know, he's the one that threw the bread in the middle of the storm, you know, instead of feeding it to the pigs, and you find out later that he burned it on purpose so he could feed her, and that was the first they had eaten in days. And so it's just like, dude, you know, he's a good guy. You know, why wasn't Gail out there shooting things and bringing it to him? You know, the baker slash painter slash, you know, good guy, he's the one that's actually going out on a limb because his mom beat the crap out of him for it. You know, she beat him because he burned the bread, and then she goes, well, go feed it the pig. So he took it out there on purpose to give to her. So you're kind of like, you know, why, you know, give him some attention. So anyway, we pick up, you know, of course, in this part of the story, we find out that PETA has been rescued from the Capitol, and that he has been turned against Katniss, and he grabs her by the throat and starts to throttle her at the end of Mockingjay Part One. And then she is recovering from the attack. Like we said, being brainwashed by the Panem Capital. Katniss, she takes a more, you know, after she recovers, she's got the bruises and she can't talk, on, you know, bruises on her throat. She takes a more active role as the Mockingjay. She not so much active as, but she starts to become a little more invested in it. And, you know, her character becomes a little more mentally invested in it, trying to figure out what she can do to help the innocent civilians, you know, because everybody else, they, you know, from the districts, that have joined together to fight the Capitol, they don't give a crap. You know, it's all part of war. You know, it is, they have this mindset. Even Gail has this mindset that, that casualties are a part of war, and if they aren't helping them, then they're with the Capitol and they deserve to die anyway. So it's really kind of a brutal, outlook on it. And, you know, but, at first me, you know, hearing this point of view, it's like, well, war is war, but, you know, what about the civilians? And it goes to the point where they were going to, they had this one campaign where they were trying to retrieve a weapons cache from, I think it was either District 3 or District 2, I can't remember, and it was underground. So they said, we'll just blow up the sides You know, if we can't get it because it's so well guarded, we'll just blow up the sides and block the tunnels and let them choke to death, basically. Let them suffocate, and then nobody can have the weapons. So, of course, Katniss freaks out, and she's like, no, we got to help the civilians. We got to let them out. And so they finally, President Coin takes her side and said, all right, destroy everything except for the one tunnel. So all the civilians have a way to get out, the train tunnel. And then they go to meet them, and she walks up to this one guy, and he puts a pistol up underneath her neck, and she just finally shows some life and says she's tired of being the pawn of President Snow, you know, the main, you know, the big bad in this, Donald Sutherland. And she's tired of killing for him. She's tired of being his slave. And he's like, I'm nobody's slave. And she just lays it all down. And she goes, well, if you're fighting for the Capitol and we're killing each other, that makes us his slave. You know, each of the districts, we're their slaves. You know, we're his slaves because we're doing what he wants anyway. You know, we're killing each other while they're sitting pretty in the Capitol, basically. And so she basically lays it on the line, you know, turn your weapons towards the Capitol, turn your weapons to Snow. And then somebody shoots her in the chest. But of course, you know, she has the bulletproof armor. So she kind of gets beat up in this movie a little bit, which is, you know, is kind of cool to see that human aspect of her, that she can be taken down. People are kind of trying to, you know, almost, there's a few people that are seeing that she's basically just a mouthpiece and not really this great leader that, you know, they've made her out to be as the Mockingjay. But we all know that she's, you know, she's so obsessed with killing Snow, she'll do anything. But the whole thing is, I mean, it's almost got to me, it's got kind of a psychological warfare kind of aspect to it. I like the character of President Snow because he's smart, and he took one of the closest people to her and turned him against her, and then let them rescue him. So either he's going to kill her or break her will. You know, to where she doesn't want to fight anymore. So, I forgot to ask this. You've read the books, correct, Adam?
I've actually read the first book, the second book, mm-hmm. and I started the third book, but my wife had a baby, and I don't think I ever picked it up in 3 years. Three and a half,
nice.
Actually.
Okay.
Three and a half years, actually. Yeah. I've got all three of them, but I haven't picked up the last one. Mm-hmm. But I did see the last movie, which was, I think we talked about it this time last year, actually.
Roughly, right around this time.
Yep, and this was actually one of the first shows we did, wasn't it? I think it was.
No.
Anyway.
I mean, we started in May, so it was.
Oh, I thought we started
6 months into it.
Oh, so we were, you know, 20-some shows. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, I've read the first two. I know how they turn out, though, because I've spoke with people, and I kind of, they let some spoilers go. But it's I think I mentioned it the last time we talked about it, but this is like the first time that I've read a young adult series, which I don't feel like it's young adult. Yeah. I think it's absolutely adult material, you know, in the way that children kill children, and the president is just completely heartless, and he's murdered so many people that he has to have like flowers all around him and stuff like that all the time because he smells death or something. I don't remember, what it was.
His weapon of choice is poison.
Poison.
So he puts
poison
in a drink, but he has to drink it as well.
Yeah.
You know, to keep any suspicions from arising. So yeah. He takes the antidote, so he's fine, but the poison has left permanent sores, open sores in his mouth. That's why he's always coughing up blood.
Yeah, okay, that's what it
his
was.
His breath always smells like stale blood. So he has to. He wears the rose to cover that smell.
I gotcha. That makes. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's, I mean, well, I mean, we look at it and there's been, and we've probably talked about it before, but there's been a comparison to this. There's been, you know, not controversies or anything like that, but people don't, you know, there's been a minority of people that don't like it because it is, you know, kids versus kids. You know, it could be, you know, from, I forget the ages of the Hunger Games of the tribute, you know, the tributes of volunteers tribute. But yeah. You know, it's kids versus kids, you know, you if you think of, the young girl, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting everybody's names in this, but, you know, she meets that little girl and she's taking care of her and she ends up, you know, she ends up dying. And then all, you know, it's teenagers that are, you know, using medieval weapons on each other, basically.
Yeah.
Bows, arrows,
yeah.
Swords, pikes, you know, tridents and all this other stuff. And then they finally, you know, they rise up against them and basically break the game, you know,
yes, and that's,
because they're in an arena. So.
Yeah. And it's really cool. I'm sure if you haven't seen it, the way she actually breaks the game, I guess, for lack of a better term, is really, really cool, because it's like all of a sudden everybody kind of looks at each other like, all right, what do we do now? This has never happened before.
Well, look at that.
You know, so,
huh,
yeah.
Like, look at that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, everybody just kind of puts their hands on their hips and go, huh. Wow.
Huh.
All right.
But,
well, there's your problem right there. But, there's an arrow in the ceiling.
So, it's, you know, and there's been a lot of people that that don't like it, not for that reason, but because they have compared it to the manga and the movie Battle Royale. And if you're familiar with that, it's where the, you know, the school age, you know, the high school children are basically kidnapped and put on an island and forced to fight to the death, you know, and they have different weapons and they find different weapon caches and things like that, automatic weapons, swords, and they're forced to fight. And so everybody was kind of like, oh, the Hunger Games is ripping off, you know, ripping this off, blah, blah, blah. But if you read the storylines, they're different, and you can tell they're different. And the fact that the author had never really even heard of that, you know, according to her, she's never heard of the first, you know, of Battle Royale. They still make for entertaining, you know, they're great movies, in my opinion. They're really good. And, so you've got, you know, pretty much, now, you know, the movies have made, stars of, you know, most of the younger actors. And then you have, you know, of course, Jennifer Lawrence, Josh Hutcherson, Liam Hemsworth. And then you've got, you know, the backup of Woody Harrelson, Elizabeth Banks, Julianne Moore, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and then Stanley Tucci and Donald Sutherland. I mean, you've got,
isn't
some
that cool? Like, that's so really awesome to me. Like,
yeah,
like,
let's, man.
Think about it, though. You have, like, think about it. You have, take for instance, you have the Rolling Stones on stage, and then they have, you know, some you know, up and coming singer come in and sing him. And it's like the Rolling Stones playing your backup for you. You know what I mean? It's like they're playing the music while you're singing, and nobody and they're just kind of sitting in the background, not really doing much. They're just kind of supporting you, which to me that shows and I don't know. It shows some character of the actors who, you know, they don't. I mean, of course they're going to get billed and they're going to get mentioned in the credits.
They're going to get the money.
Right? Exactly. But because at the very basic aspect of everything, it is a business, so I can understand that. But I mean, you can go, you know, 30 minutes in the movie and never see Woody Harrelson, you know, or, you know, President
right,
Snow,
right.
I've lost his name, the guy that plays President Snow,
Donald Sutherland.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
huge actor. He probably has, like, yeah. I mean, in the last movie, I think he had more screen time than the last movie, but I think there was like 12 minutes
in this,
you know,
past movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like,
and what he does,
it's like, they're not
what
really
he
there
does
to,
in those 12 minutes or, yeah. I mean, it's all about the younger, you know, it's all about Katniss and PETA and Gale and all the, you know, those, you know, basically it's all about Katniss, but, and right. how she strikes a revolution against the Capitol, you know, she really, you know, there's already a revolution rising. There's already, you know, in District 13, there's already, you know, these, help me out with a word here that I'm looking for. I keep saving revolutionaries, but we'll just say that they're this uprising in District 13 that nobody really, you know, there's rumors or there's whispers, but nobody really knows about it, but they're already preparing a fight.
Right.
And the fact that she broke the game to use that quote again, you know, that really, that struck a chord with everybody. And they're like, now's the time. You know, this is our Mockingjay. This is who we have. Let's use her. Boom. Let's do this. And going back to these actors, you know, with Woody Harrelson and Donald Sutherland, whether they have a lot of screen time or not, it's really what they do with it. If they're sold out to the character,
right.
and everything, you know,
right.
you think of Glenn Close in Guardians of the Galaxy. Glenn Close was there. She was there. She did well, but she was there for a paycheck. And she did that so she could go on to do something else. Right. She wasn't there because she was really believing in the character that she had or the movie, because I can guarantee that she's never heard of Guardians of the Galaxy and she doesn't really care to know more about them. And so she did well because she's a phenomenal actor, but you know, it doesn't really, you know, it's one of those, and it's a write off. You're good to go. I could be wrong, but that's what I've read. But you've got Donald Sutherland, who, like you said, is a phenomenal actor. And in this, he became President Snow for me. And you really despise him for it. You know what I mean? And he's just a great actor. And then Woody Harrelson is the comic relief. And just, he's funny, but you know, he really, his character actually cares about Katniss and and PETA wants to see them survive. And then Woody Harrelson is, in my opinion, a very underrated actor for a lot of different reasons, but he's a lot of fun, man. So I think he did great. And then you've got Elizabeth Banks, who threw, you know, you could tell she threw everything she had into this, and you see the pardon me, you see her character blossom over the movies too. She's there because she has to be. She doesn't really care about them, and then she falls in love with these kids and wants to see them survive as well. And then she becomes part of, you know, becomes part of the revolution, and she leaves the comfort of the Capitol to be with the Mockingjay. So it's really cool to see these characters develop over the four movies. And then the other one that this was his last big screen appearance before his, he actually did not get to finish filming because of his untimely death. But that's Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is one of the best actors of our time. I mean, believe that with all
absolutely. My heart. Yeah. Hands down.
And when I heard he was going to be in Mockingjay, I was like, as what? You know, this is Philip Seymour Hoffman. He's done a lot of stuff. I mean, he's, you know, of course, done Twister and a few others. But then you look at his, you know, performance in Capote and a few other things. And you're like, man, he's come a long way. And, dude, he is – you just don't know about him in this, whether he's he starts out, you thinking he's a bad guy. He's the new game master, or whatever they call him. And he actually turns out to be, you know, a double agent.
And, oh, that was so awesome. The last movie was so sweet.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then they, you know, of course, had to rewrite some stuff because he wasn't there to film a few extra scenes. So it was really sad to see his performance in this, you know, while it's short, was still great, was still really good, because you could see that his character Plutarch could see right through President Coin, played by Julianne Moore. You could see that he could see through President Coin, who starts off as a sympathetic character. If you look at the characters of President Snow and President Coin, they start on the opposite ends of the spectrum, and then they kind of pass each other in the middle, and then they take each other's places almost. More so for President Coin than President Snow, of course, because President Snow is still a piece of crap through the end of the movie and through up until his death at the end of this movie. Spoiler alert, sorry about that. you see President Coin start off as a sympathetic character, a likable character, and as her character, as she progresses and as you learn more, she's just another President Snow who has struck this revolution, has led this led these people to their deaths, and fought this war just so she could take over. And Plutarch can see that, and you can see that in certain parts of the movie. So, in Donald Sutherland's character, President Snow, starts off as the giant piece of crap who sends children to their deaths, and makes them fight in these games, and he lives in the lap of luxury while other people are struggling through the districts. You know, as you go through, you know, the capital down from District 2 down to District 12, you can see that the poverty grows as you go down. So he doesn't give a crap about them, really. But as, you know, as he loses the battle, he makes a statement that says, I've never killed someone without a purpose. I've never, you know, I may have sent, you know, people to their, you know, I may have sent children to their deaths, but not without a purpose. I don't kill wastefully. And I was kind of like, oh, that's kind of, you know, ugh, what kind of person are you? But as you see, he's just a frail old man that's trying to keep on his bony fingers around, you know, the what little bit of power he's got left. And he almost becomes sympathetic because you can see that that's all he has, and he thinks he's doing what is best to keep his and keep his, you know, his family safe, because he mentions his granddaughter, and she's shown right. as being a Katniss fan, and that ticks him off, you know, because he can't stand her. That's his nemesis, you know, so. So they trade spots, basically, almost. You know, President Snow's never going to be a good guy like President Coin started out. So when when the Capitol loses, as you go along, you know, they are storming the castle. Katniss has this strike team that's with her. And basically what they think they're doing is filming propaganda films to show the rebels, so that they, you know, don't lose faith in what they're doing. So they, you know, they keep fighting and everything, but they end up traveling through the Capitol so she can assassinate Snow. And so they, of course, they have to run through another Hunger Games. At one point, someone says, "Welcome to the 76th Hunger Games." And so they have to go through all these traps, the tar, the guns, the, so they make their way, and the whole time PETA's on the brink of freaking out, and he tries to kill her, and then they release the mutts, and the mutts are the most terrifying thing that I've seen in a while in a movie. Well, since Halloween, I guess you could say. But they release them, and they're fighting underground, and so they have this whole struggle that they have to go through until she finally gets to the point where she's right outside the Capitol. She's right outside, and she runs through the rebels attack as she's going, you know, she's getting closer and closer to the Capitol because they're taking in refugees from the Capitol. So on the outskirts, they're taking refugees into the mansion where President Snow lives. And so she and Gale are actually dressed as, you know, people from the Capitol, and they're trying to get closer, and the rebels attack. So Gale is captured, and he's saying, "Shoot me, shoot me, shoot me." So she decides not to, because she only has the one arrow left, and she wants to save it for Snow. So she goes forward. there's they're taking children first, and she can see this. So they have all these people handing children over and handing their children over to the Capitol guards, and they're taking them through the gates and all this. A bomb goes off where the children are. And so, let me go back. As they're handing the children over, you see a Capitol, whatever they're called, hovercraft go over, and they drop the parachutes that they dropped in the Hunger Games that contain food or medicine or whatever. So they drop these, and they're actually bombs that land on land near the children and on the people. And so when they rush forward to help the children that have been bombed and help everybody, because it was mostly just the children that had been bombed, a secondary bomb goes off and just kills everybody in that area. And it's one of those things that, when the first bombs go off, you see that everybody's rushing to aid, and they send in medics from the rebels and everybody else. And Katniss's sister is actually one of the medics, and she sees her and Primrose, and she says, "Prim," and she starts running to her. A secondary bomb goes off, kills Prim, kills everybody in the area, and they think the Capitol has bombed their own people just to get to the rebels. So that immediately turns everybody against President Snow, and Katniss, finally figures out this was a plan that Gale had spoken to someone about setting, a small explosion off to gather everybody up, and then setting off a secondary larger explosion to finish everybody off as a trap. So she goes, she knows that the Capitol didn't do it. She knows that the rebels did it, and it was President Coin that did it. So when they gather around, they realize that Snow's been captured. She has her, last big hurrah with him. They talk about everything that he says. He's truly sorry to hear about her sister. It's such a waste of life. And then he basically says, "You need to watch Coin, because you think I'm bad, wait till you see what she does." And when they gather together to meet, she has all the survivors from the Hunger Games meet, Woody Harrelson, Katniss, PETA, and a few others. She says, "Well, and in the absence of a president, I'm going to take the honor, humbly take the honor of me being the interim president until we can have a proper election." And everybody's kind of like, "Oof," kind of has that thing like, "What are you doing?" So as she says, "So as, to celebrate and to show people that the Capitol is over, we're going to have a celebratory Hunger Games where we're going to take the Capitol's children and make them fight each other, and that will be the last one." So at this point, everybody can see that Coin just as bad as Snow. But Katniss has a plan of her own. She says, "I'm in as long as I can put my arrow through Snow and kill him." And so she faces Snow. He's tied up. He's, he's waiting for her to shoot him. And they have this huge crowd around. It's in this arena. Everybody in the, it feels like everybody that is left from the districts and the Capitol are watching. She marches out this incredibly and way too long of a, march out to kill him. And she draws her arrow, pulls back, and at the last second aims up and puts her arrow through President Coin's heart. And nice. Then they elect a true leader, a good person, to be the president. And then Katniss is arrested, but they say, they of course know why she did it, so they let her go. And she goes home to start rebuilding her life. Her mom stays behind as a medic and as a doctor and everything. And she's out hunting one day, and then of course your epilogue, your prologue, your afterword to the book is that PETA shows up and he's planted primrose around in the garden of their house in District 12, the Victor's house, which is a really nice mansion and everything. And he says, I hope you don't mind I've planted this around. It's primrose. And she realizes that she's been in love with him all the time. And it shows later on that they are married and have two children. And she has this creepy little talk with her baby, who wakes up crying. You know, she's in the field and she's watching her son play with PETA, and the baby cries and she looks down and she goes, oh, did you have a nightmare? I have nightmares too. And I was like, whoa, chill on the creep. You know, that's like over 9,000 here.
Yeah.
But she goes, one day I'll tell you about them and why, you know, why they're still there and da 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 da. And she brings the creep level down a little bit, and that's the end of the movie. So you see the rise of the character of Katniss from, you know, small town girl to a revolutionary, to the face of the rebel army, to back down to a small town girl who's just trying to live her life and be happy with her husband, who at one point tried to kill her because he was brainwashed. But to me, I trivialize a lot of things in it, but it was a great ending. I mean, it was a great wrap up to everything. I mean, you couldn't ask more. It followed the book. I mean, there wasn't a lot of variances from the book to this. I mean, of course, they're going to take liberties with it, as they do every book, you know, book onto film. But it's to me, I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I've seen it twice now, once with my family over Thanksgiving, and once before with a friend of mine. And we enjoyed it, thought it was great. I'm really glad I got to see it. And it was, you know, it was kind of, you know, it's kind of sad because you kind of look forward to these things. You know, it's all, you know, it's going to be a big blockbuster. It's going to be awesome. And then you realize, you know, this is the last movie in the series. So, you know, there's no more Hunger Games until they reboot it in about 5 years. But because that's the way Hollywood's going right now. Everything's rebooted. But so, you know, there's a lot of different things that that they could have done. I don't know. There was a lot of character development, so I can't really complain there at all. And the cinematography was beautiful. You know, the acting was up to par. You know, it was really, you know, some of it was really good. Some of it was like, you could have, you know, bring it down a little bit, or, you know, put a little more emotion into it. But, Josh Hutcherson was really good. You know, in his, you know, he kind of went to crazy land there for a little bit. So he pulled that off.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Yeah. The special effects, like I said, the mutts that they released, which were these kind of cannibalistic zombie kind of creatures that used to be human, apparently, but now want to feast on everything that isn't themselves. They were pretty horrifying, to be honest with you. So had some heartbreaking moments, a few tear jerkers. So overall, it was a fantastic movie and a great wrap up to this Hunger Games, you know, series. And what's cool about it is, you know, Jennifer Lawrence, you know, really kind of took her place as I guess you could almost say a female action hero. A lot of action in this movie. You know, she's done her fight scenes. She's done her, you know, all this stuff. While it's not primarily an action movie, it's, you know, it's a fantasy, you know, whatever, you know, dystopian future, blah blah blah. She's proven that she can, you know, she can kick a little butt. So I think it's a good, you know, it's a good it's a great film, and it was a good wrap up to this series, as I said before. Did you have any questions or anything that you wanted to say?
Not really, no, because that's actually on my list of things to do Becky has over Christmas break. She has like two whole weeks off where she didn't have to work. So we think we're gonna catch up on some movies. I think we're gonna see some Star Wars, and obviously Star Wars and Mockingjay. The last one is on the short list of things to go and see. And then The Good Dinosaur is one of them. But yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to seeing this movie because, like you said, I'm three movies invested into it, and I feel like I have to at least go see this one just to round it out. And even if it was awful, I felt like I'd have to just, you know, see it for the heck of it.
Yeah, I mean, not for the heck of it, but just for some closure to the whole series. So, and it was good closure, you know. We mentioned that, or I mentioned that it kind of solidified, not solidified, but it kind of, you know, proved that Jennifer Lawrence, you know, can do a little bit of action adventure, you know, and be a little bit an action hero, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term.
Right.
So I decided to pull up a bit of a list here of, you know, 10 action heroes who happen to be women. You know, the title of this article that we found was Top 10 Female Action Heroes. So we're not trying to be sexist or anything like that, but when you say action hero, when somebody says action hero, my mind immediately goes to Schwarzenegger, Bruce Willis, and Sylvester Stallone, and all these other guys who, you know, who are known for their action movies.
Right.
You know?
It's predominantly male dominated.
Yeah, it is definitely male dominated with these action movies. So while they are few and, you know, there's not really far between, but kind of, you know, few and far between, you got some action heroes out there that can really, you know, put boots to teeth, you know, to, you know, coin my own phrase here, and they are ladies. So let's take a look at a few of them here. Anyway, when I say a few, I mean 10. Starting at 10, we're going to take a look at what I think and what hopefully most people agree with me. And these are no order, folks. These are no order, Adam. We're going to take a look at probably one of the toughest and maybe the best female action hero out there. And that is going to be Ripley from Alien. Alien franchise.
Good call.
Because all through the Alien franchise, whether you're a fan of 3 and 4 or not, you realize that she is not one to be messed with. Especially when she gets that mech loader. Holy crap. Get away from her.
The thing is though, like she's one of those characters. I'm not going to say actor, but she's one of those characters who the way it was written, she's been on point every single movie, despite, like you said, if you didn't like 3 and 4 or you don't care for it or what. But she's been on point every single movie. And if you don't like anything of the movie, you like Ripley.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Ripley, I mean, she starts out as just this kind of almost, I guess, meek scientist, and then you put her in a situation where she's going to have to survive, and she does anything and everything she can to survive.
Right.
You know, blowing a giant, you know, alien creature that has murdered everyone on her ship out of an airlock into space, because in space, no one can hear you scream. But
that's what they say.
But she is the bar for she should be, you know, Sigourney Weaver in this role. This character should be the bar that every lady that takes on an action role should look to, in my opinion, especially aliens.
Yeah.
So I think that they should look to her. I think she's the best, man. She's fantastic. I mean, she can kick some butt, and she she has a lot to answer for in the terms of progressing the role of females in action movies and sequences, and of female survivors. So let's move on to the next one. It's got to be the other one that that kind of set the bar too.
This is the one that I thought of when you said Femme Fatale. This is she's the one that I thought of.
Well, it's Sarah Connor from Terminator and Terminator 2. So I mean, what more can be said? You put a lady in a survival situation, and she turns out to be the female version of Rambo in the second movie.
Yes, but I mean, think about though. She's a mother trying to protect her son. That's the basis of the whole thing. She's a mother trying to defend her son. So, yeah. Not somebody I want to mess with.
Mama Bear, man. But she's not only trying to defend her son, because, I mean, you know, he's now living with a foster family, but she's trying to defend mankind. And
right.
So because everybody thinks she's insane because she really knows what happened, and she knows that Skynet is evil and is going to destroy the world. So Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor is another one that, you know, like you said, we went from survival mode in the first movie to straight up, she's jacked in this. I remember her doing the pull-ups on the bed. And just waylaying everybody in the psych ward, and having, I think it was a syringe full of cleaner, putting that guy's neck. And I mean, she's going straight for the jugular in these movies. So, she's fantastic. Now, the next one on the list, Nikita from La Femme Nikita. So, it's been a long time since I've seen La Femme Nikita, but it was Luc Besson. And from what I can remember, you know, she's not the assassin that you'd expect, but she gets the job done, you know. And the director of this, Luc Besson, has a history of having a female hero, or you know, action hero in his movies, or the female protagonist. If you look at The Fifth Element, and unfortunately at Lucy, you know, you've got, you know, two, and this movie, you've got two. Yeah, unfortunately, Lucy, you can go ahead and laugh. Terrible movie.
Well, it's the second. This is like the fifth time you've brought it up, man.
Oh my god!
I think you secretly love this movie.
You take it back. You take that back.
I take it back. I apologize.
You, because I was honestly insulted by that. But you've got, I mean, he does a good job in this movie and Fifth Element. So let's move on to the next one. Lara Croft in Tomb Raider.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a huge fan of the Tomb Raider movies, especially the second one.
The second one was awful.
Yeah. But the first one, it is what it is. But Angelina Jolie as Lara Croft, she's a force, not so much a force to be reckoned with, but she can look after herself. You know, she's got the martial arts. She's got the, you know,
right.
She's almost, you know, kind of a. Well, a lot of people have compared her to Nathan Drake. So, because of the two, you know, the two video game franchises, you know, almost a female Indiana Jones, things like that. But she's as a character, strong personality. Martial arts, you know, good action, you know, a good action hero. You know, if you, as a character, as Lara Croft, if they redid the movies, not saying Angelina Jolie did a bad job. I don't think she does a great job in just about everything she's in, save the second movie of Tomb Raider, you know, Cradle of Life, or whatever it's called.
I mean, if you were going to make Lara Croft, anybody. I think Angelina Jolie was a great pick. Just the simple fact that's the best movie that the movie could be with her cast as Lara Croft. Because anybody else, you know, I can't see anybody else being Lara Croft. Plus, right. She did a fantastic job in it.
Oh, so she did a great job.
For being as mediocre a movie as it is, that's the best it could be. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So moving on, we're going to pick up a character that not a lot of people that I've spoken to know about, and I don't know if you've ever seen this movie yourself, but I saw it one time just because I was a big fan of the Ong Bak movies. Well, the first two. I was a big fan of Ong Bak, let's put it that way, and Tony Jaa. When I first saw Ong Bak, I was blown away by who Tony Jaa was. And he's another one of these, martial artists who does his own stunts, and he's, gosh, he's out of this world. Just recently showed up in Fast and Furious 7. But he kind of had a protege, and the character from the movie Chocolate from 2008, the character Zen, and she is this character. I can't pronounce the girl's real name, Jija Yanin, I think. It's Thai. But she's in this film, and Zen is an autistic girl with an unbound level of skill in martial arts. And takes on the gangs that owe her dying mother money. So I remember seeing this movie. I was like, what is this about? And it's this young girl, like I said, who's autistic. And she watches these movies and actually shows Ong Bak in this movie. She watches these martial arts films and she learns martial arts. And she has a proficiency for it. Proficiency. She knows it real good. She can learn it real good. And so by watching these films, she learns Muay Thai. And she goes after these gangs that owe her mother money because her mother's dying. And it is, dude, I want to know other films that this girl has done, because she just wails on these guys. I mean, she is a phenomenal martial artist. And this character was such an astounding character for me, because it was, like I said, it was a young autistic girl who just knows that she wants to help her mom. And from the introduction of the character, you don't know what to expect from her. And then all of a sudden she just lays into these gangs, and you're just, holy crap. It's such a wow. What was that? It sounded like you stepped on a duck.
I need a new chair. I need to oil the bottom of this one. So, I was trying to mute it, but no, it didn't work.
The character of Zen is such a cool action hero, female action hero, that I was blown away by it. If you haven't seen it, and I mean, it's not going to win any Academy Awards, but man, it is a stinking cool movie. All right, next up on the list, she has to be in there. Alice from Resident Evil. If you want an action hero, if you want an action hero, you got to go with Alice. I mean, she's just bad. You know, she doesn't realize how incredibly bad she is. But the martial arts, the enhanced everything as it goes along. So you've got. I mean, there's not much that can be said that you don't see in the movies already, and know why she is an incredible female action hero. So that, and Mila Jovovich I love her. So we're going to move on real quick. And on this list, and this is kind of the reason why I chose to go with this list, was Katniss Everdeen from The Hunger Games. She starts out, like we said, as a girl, an everyday girl who's just basically good with a bow and arrow, and turns into an unlikely hero, and dominates on the battlefield, and turns into a war hero and the face of a revolution. So Jennifer Lawrence did a great job portraying Katniss and being a female action hero. Next up, this is a little out there, but you gotta mention her. You gotta mention her because she was a cool character, man. And she kicked a lot of tail in the movie, but that's Elastigirl from The Incredibles.
Yes. Yes, that is awesome. I am so glad this list mentioned her.
I mean, Elastigirl is kind of the glue that keeps the family together. And in The Incredibles, you know, she's living her life after the ban of superheroes, and she's being the mom, she's being the wife, and she's living her normal life, whereas Mr. Incredible is hitting his midlife crisis and wants to go back to superheroing. So she proves who she is and how much of an action hero she is by going after her husband, you know, and not missing a step from her younger days. So Elastigirl, here's to you. And I'm glad she's on this list. Now this one I added in, I took one out and I've added one in because she's not on the list, but let's hit the first, this next one first, and then we'll go with the other one. The next on the list is Hit Girl.
Okay.
starting off as a preteen, foul mouth, little jerk, man. I don't know how old she was supposed to be, like 11 or 12 in the first movie, and somewhere around there. But, dude, the mouth on that girl, you kind of want to turn around and say, hey, listen, knock it off. And then she whips out her like her sword staff thing and cuts your ear off. And then you realize that you probably shouldn't have said that. Hit Girl is a different character. She is, like I said, she takes on this superhero persona because her dad has raised her to do so. Her dad, in the movie, is a comic book aficionado. He loves everything to do with comic books, so he decides to fight against the comic book. She comes from a comic book series, and the storyline's a little different, but we're going to go along with the movie. Her dad has raised her to fight crime so they can get to the mob boss that actually killed his wife, her mother, and it had to do with her death. So he, from birth, has raised her to to learn martial arts, to learn handguns, melee weapons, things like that. So at 12 years old, 13 years old, you know, going on, she can kill men with her, you know, with her finger. So she is absolutely an action hero, albeit a rather foul little one. But so she is an action hero. Now, last on the list, because she wasn't on the list, I took one out because I wasn't familiar with the character. And I don't know why she wasn't on this list, but we're going to go with Black Widow.
Yes, exactly.
Introduced in the second Iron Man, you got glimpses of who she's going to be and what she can actually do. And then you go into Avengers and Avengers Age of Ultron and Captain America, the Winter Soldier. You know, and how could you leave her off this list? Because when somebody, you know, you think of a modern day female action hero, and immediately Natasha Romanoff, she pops into mind, Black Widow from the Avengers, because standing with a group of guys who are absolutely, you know, who have these incredible powers, you've got in the movie Captain America, who is, you know, got some level of super strength, not Hulk or Thor level. But, you know, he can lift a car, you know, lift a motorcycle over his head. He can throw a motorcycle, as we saw in Avengers Age of Ultron. And he's this master, strategist. And he's incredible with, you know, he's a super soldier. He's got this super soldier serum running through his body. And then you got Iron Man, billionaire playboy philanthropist in a billion-dollar suit of armor. And then you've got Thor, who's Thor. You know what I mean? And then you've got
right.
You've got the Hulk, who is, you know, as Iron Man said, you know, as Tony Stark said, is a 7-foot green rage monster, and and then Hawkeye. You know, you've got Hawkeye and Black Widow, who are these two basically SHIELD agents. They don't have any powers. They're just good at what they do. And it almost seems like she's got even more of a handicap, you know, not being superpowered, but she's also a girl, you know, and she takes that she takes that stereotype and completely crushes it. Because if you remember in Avengers, when she's introduced in the Avengers, she's tied up to a chair and she's playing the helpless girl, and she destroys those guys.
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie, when she's sitting in that chair and who was it? Somebody calls the cell phone, and he's like,
Coulson.
Coulson. He's like, it's for you. And she's like, she's on the phone holding it with her shoulder. She's like, yeah. I'm in the middle of something. And he's like, well, you got to get here. She's like, all right. So then all of a sudden, just this chaos ensues, and she walks out with her shoes. You know, she's walking out with her high heels in her hand, just like any other girl would do, you know? She makes it look easy.
Yeah. And
that's one of my favorite. That's literally one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah, she takes that stereotype, like I said, and she destroys it and leaves it laying on the floor, because she's gorgeous. And she doesn't have superpowers, so there, you know, she kind of has that. She's going to be kind of a flaky character, and she turns around and she's one of the best characters in the movie. And people have said that they love the character of Black Widow because of what she can do, despite being having no superpowers and being on a superpowered team. She and Hawkeye both. But like I said, coming from, you know, a predominantly male genre, and then coming out as this character, this strong female character, I mean, it was awesome to see. So Black Widow, man. So that pretty much does it for the list on that. And I think I enjoyed it. I agreed with every one of them, even, you know, except for the one I took out and put Black Widow in.
Even Elastigirl, man. That was a great addition.
That's a great one, man. But, you know, everybody's like, what? No, man, she whipped butt in that movie, in the Incredibles.
Yeah, I mean, the diversity of this list was just spot on, man. It was good.
The one movie that not a lot of people have probably seen is Chocolate.
I've never even heard of it. I've heard of there was another one back in the 90s called, it's like Chocolate but without the E.
Chocolate. Yeah.
It's Chocolate. It must be indie.
I don't even want to talk about it. But I think it was a Johnny Depp movie, to be honest with you. If I can remember.
I think you're right, and that surprises me that you know that.
Shut up. Shut up. So anyway, yeah, and I shouldn't know that it has Alfred Molina in it too.
Yes, you should not, because it's Alfred Molina, and it's an obscure movie.
You know what?
But actually, you know what? You know what, Ronnie? I'm impressed. I'm impressed. And to quote Anchorman, I'm impressed. I'm not even mad.
I'm impressed. But it's Chocolate with E. It was made in 2008, and if it's on Netflix, I really highly suggest that you watch it. If you're an action fan, if you're a martial arts fan especially, so if you like martial arts movie, this movie is definitely for you. Fantastic movie. So, Adam, you got anything to add?
No, I mean, I had a lot of fun with this list. We kind of deviated from our standard type list, I guess. Mm-hmm. But man, this was fun. I liked it a lot.
And I just found out that Chocolate is on Netflix. So
yes,
you should definitely watch it. So give that a watch. Adam, I know we can find you. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I hope you don't mind. Actually, no, you say
don't
it.
Don't mind
tell,
at all.
Tell us where you can find us on. Tell us where we can find you on the internet.
You can find me at Adam Runyon 1 on the Twitter.
On Twitter. You can find me on Twitter.
The Twitter scope.
You can find me on Twitter at Show Enough, SH0NUFF. You can find the show on Twitter and Periscope at Screaming Boy PR. You can find us on Facebook. Just look up Screaming Boy Productions. You can find us on Instagram at Screaming Boy Productions. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, which is on Blog Talk Radio and iTunes and Stitcher. You can find us on there with a ton of great shows like the Movie Club that we mentioned before with Mark Radulich and Robert Winfrey. You can find our good friends Jesse Starcher and Teasley on From the Cheap Seats. You can find Jesse Starcher once again. And thankfully, he puts up with me as a guest on there frequently on Source Material, where he covers everything about comic books. And we are going to be releasing a show soon about Judgment on Gotham, Batman and Judge Dredd. And I'm to hit a pun on this, I'm really dreading this because it's not a good comic book. It's not been a good book so far.
So what you're saying is that the book is as bad as that joke.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Yes, awesome. I get it.
Hear the applause. But anyway, you can find all kinds of shows like those, like Metal Hammer of Doom, Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, 411 Ground and Pound. So we got something on there just about for everybody. So it's there's a lot of great content on there. So go check it out. We ask that you just find us on any one of these places like iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and the Radulich Broadcasting Network. Hit those 5 stars and hit that subscribe button. Leave us a little love on the in the comments because we want to know how much you love us and we want to tell you how much we love you. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter if you think we've left someone out or you want to make any changes or comments on tonight's content, such as the top 10 female action heroes. And we will catch you later. Have a good one. We're out.
You've been listening to the Screaming Boy Podcast. Find us on Twitter at Screaming Boy PR, Instagram, Screaming Boy Productions, or check out our website, www.screamingboy.com. We're out.